The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy, Joe and Teresa Graydon. Antiviral meds need help in recovery from flu. Question. Last week, I came down with a horrible cough, followed within a few hours by fever and exhaustion. By the next morning, I had muscle aches and figured I had caught the flu. The weather was dreadful, and I didn't have the energy to drag myself to the doctor. So when I saw that the practice had an e-visit option, I used it. I was very disappointed. A doctor I've never met responded that I didn't meet the criteria for treatment because I don't have chronic heart or lung disease, and I'm not being treated for cancer. Instead, he told me to take Tylenol and ibuprofen, stay hydrated, and wash my hands frequently. He assured me that my symptoms would probably improve within 10 days. Needless to say, that wasn't very helpful. I called my regular doctor, who said I should come in to be tested. I'm glad I braved the bad weather. Test show I had type A flu, and she prescribed Tamiflu. I started taking it and felt noticeably better by the next day. My cough almost disappeared and my temperature is back to normal. I don't understand why they would have an e-visit protocol that essentially just says suffer. Answer, we don't understand that either. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention acknowledges that antiviral medications can be helpful. The agency lists four drugs that may be prescribed to treat outpatients with acute uncomplicated influenza. Two are pills, Tamiflu and Xofluza. Zanamivir, which is Relenza, is inhaled, and Rapivab is given by IV injection. Question, you have written about authorized generic drugs. I can't find a pharmacy that will fill my prescription with an authorized generic. Can you steer me in the right direction? Answer, the makers of authorized generic drugs have negotiated agreements with the brand name manufacturers so that they can use the exact same recipe, quote unquote. Sometimes authorized generic drugs are even made on the same production line. Finding a list of authorized generic drugs can be a challenge, and we don't know of any list that is complete. However, you will find the best list we could assemble on our website, peoplespharmacy.com, and in our e-guide to saving money on medicines. Look for it in the Health eGuide section of the website. How can you control your blood pressure? What's your blood pressure? Is it within the healthy range? Scientists have found that people with normal or lower blood pressure are less likely to have heart disease than those with elevated pressure, and that's cited in Advances in Experimental Medicine and Biology, 2017. In addition, people with hypertension, especially in middle age, are more prone to cognitive decline as they grow older, and that's cited in Circulation Research, March 29, 2019. As a result, it makes sense to pay attention to your blood pressure and control it as well as you can. In 1917, the American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association agreed on a lower threshold for defining high blood pressure. Quote, normal blood pressure is defined as less than 120 over less than 80 milligrams per mercury. Elevated BP is 120 over 129 less than 80 millimeters per mercury. Hypertension stage 1 is 130 to 139 or 80 to 89. And hypertension stage 2 is greater than or equal to 140 or greater than or equal to 90 diastolic. While some of our readers were annoyed that the bar had been moved, we heard from one who was upset that it is still higher than he considers appropriate. I read that the new blood pressure guidelines are 130 over 80, which is a reduction from the previous 140 over 90. I was taken aback because 130 systolic seems very high to me, but I guess that is what the American Heart Association considers an achievable goal. My pressure is now 114 over 75, still with a high pulse of 79, which I achieved by eating a diet rich in whole grains and fruits and vegetables. Is it realistic to use non-drug approaches to lower your blood pressure? As our reader illustrates, dietary approaches can work. In fact, There are hundreds of medical studies on the DASH, D-A-S-H, dietary approaches to stop hypertension. For lowering blood pressure, DASH diets are heavy on vegetables, fruits, and whole grains. They include low-fat dairy products, but little meat and very little processed food, such as crackers or cookies. The American College of Cardiology also recommends reducing salt, losing weight, increasing exercise, and limiting alcohol intake. What if you don't have success with one of those non-drug approaches? Doctors have an extensive range of pills they can prescribe to help you control your high blood pressure. From the Wall Street Journal, Your Health by Sumathi Reddy. An unexpected diagnosis in seniors. Doctors are identifying ADHD in older adults more often. Many seniors get diagnosed with conditions like dementia or heart disease. Not Timothy McMichael. At the age of 60, he was diagnosed with a condition most often associated with school children, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. He started taking a low dose of a stimulant about a year and a half ago and says his attentiveness and concentration at work have never been better. I've been fairly successful in my life and career and did not think of ADHD as an adult thing, says Mr. McMichael, a 61-year-old Leonardtown, Maryland resident and engineer for the Department of Defense. But I had spent the last 40 years in coming up with coping mechanisms. Like many older people diagnosed with ADHD for the first time, Mr. McMichael didn't consider the condition until his then 11-year-old son went through the diagnosis and treatment process about 5 years ago. He recognized many of the symptoms and struggles of his son and raised the issue with his son's psychiatrist, David Goodman. Dr. Goodman, an assistant professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, sees patients between the ages of 15 and 85. He has a particular interest in ADHD patients who are over 50 and have never been diagnosed. Until just a few years ago, older adults were hardly ever diagnosed with ADHD, but an awareness of the condition among younger people has surged. Doctors are beginning to make the diagnosis more often in seniors as well. Doctors don't believe the actual prevalence of the condition among seniors has increased, or that they are developing the condition as they age. Instead, doctors suspect many seniors have lived their whole lives with ADHD and only now are getting diagnosed. Many found ways to manage their symptoms in early stages of life, but hit a new hurdle as they aged and prompted a flare-up, or simply recognized the symptoms after a younger relative's diagnosis. People with ADHD experience symptoms of inattention, disorganization, and hyperactivity. Often hyperactivity diminishes with age, but challenges with attention and organization don't. Research on ADHD in seniors is nascent, but one study estimated the prevalence rate in people over 50 at 3%. That compares with about 8% in U.S. children and about 4.5% in adults under age 45. Some studies have found that about half of the children diagnosed with ADHD no longer meet diagnostic criteria by the time they reach adulthood. One challenge to diagnosing ADHD in seniors is that symptoms look similar to age-related ailments. Cognitive difficulties in older people are often attributed to memory impairments or early signs of dementia, says Dr. Goodman. For women in their early 50s, such complaints are often attributed to perimenopause, the time before a woman reaches menopause. Treatment presents another hurdle. The most common ADHD treatment among younger people is stimulants, but those are riskier in old adults because they can raise heart rate and blood pressure, so they need to be monitored closely. Leonard Adler, director of the adult ADHD programs at NYU Langone Health, says more people over the age of 60 are coming in with ADHD symptoms. Of the older patients he's treated, some found him after other psychiatrists were unwilling to treat them, he says. One patient had a history of hypertension and cardiac problems. He was able to successfully treat the patient with a long-acting amphetamine. Dr. Adler says it's important to distinguish between memory and ADHD issues in seniors. We're dealing with a population that may have some age-related memory decline, he says. In some cases, patients may mistakenly be diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment often a precursor to dementia, but other times families may be looking for any diagnosis besides cognitive decline. One family brought in their loved one, hoping it was ADHD and not dementia. The patient, says Dr. Adler, was having a substantial cognitive decline, and it obviously was dementia. So it can go both ways. It's important to get the diagnosis right. Doctors say that age-related memory impairments come on later in life and are primarily memory deficits, while ADHD symptoms start in childhood or early adolescence and revolve around inattention. While neuropsychological tests can't distinguish between the two, certain cognitive impairments are associated with pre-dementia, such as difficulty remembering a word or getting lost while driving a familiar route. Treatment of ADHD in older adults is similar to that of younger patients. Treatment can combine prescription stimulants with non-medication approaches, such as cognitive behavioral therapy and organizational skill work. A study published last year showed that CBT was an effective treatment for older ADHD patients. Dr. Goodman says most ADHD studies of stimulants don't include seniors because of greater risk with heart rate and blood pressure. There's also a risk of developing insomnia, agitation, and psychosis. Dr. Goodman's experience in treating some 800 seniors over the past 3 decades has shown few side effects, he says. He said diagnostic accuracy is crucial in seniors before prescribing any medications. Dosing is thoughtfully slow while monitoring improving cognitive symptoms, side effects, and blood pressure, he says. Sandra Kuij, an associate professor of psychiatry at Amsterdam University Medical Center, studies ADHD in seniors in the Netherlands. At her clinic, they have treated about 150 seniors aged 55 and older with stimulants, in addition to psychoeducation and cognitive behavioral therapy for ADHD. Dr. Kuij says that they are analyzing the treatment and side effects for a study they hope to publish later this year. Overall efficacy has been similar to younger adults. Patients were also treated for conditions like anxiety and depression that often present in ADHD patients and sometimes occur as side effects of a stimulant. Seniors that have lived with ADHD all their lives and don't feel impaired shouldn't be treated, she notes. Only people who feel impaired by the symptoms should be treated. Joan Fries, a 76-year-old who lives in a senior community in Coconut Creek, Florida, was diagnosed with a precursor to Alzheimer's disease about 5 years ago and started taking medication for it, says her son, Steve Fries, a freelance writer who lives in Ann Arbor, Michigan. But Ms. Fries never believed the neurologist who diagnosed her, both mother and son say. She is an advanced bridge and mahjong player and sings with an elite choir with no problem. After her husband died, and she moved to a different part of Florida, she decided to see a different neurologist. Mr. Fries talked to the neurologist, who asked him if his mother's behavior was different than most of her life. I said, no, not really. She was always losing things and a bit forgetful. The neurologist did some brain scans, comparing them with previous scans. She said she saw nothing to indicate Alzheimer's disease or dementia. Instead, she diagnosed Ms. Fries with ADHD. Ms. Fries says she was relieved to confirm what she knew all along. My husband thought I was forgetting things, but I knew there was nothing wrong with me, she says. Mr. Michael, the Department of Defense engineer, says even though he's had a successful career, he can't help but wonder how earlier treatment might have helped him. He says even his colleagues notice his improved performance at work. I'm much more focused on individual tasks, he says. I'm more efficient in how I use my day. I think my life absolutely would have been a lot easier had I known. From the Harvard Health Letter, Ask the Doctor, by Anthony Komaroff, MD. Question, is it safe for women to drink alcohol? The Harvard Health Letter has often said that it is generally healthy for women to have one alcoholic drink per day, yet I hear a recent study showed no benefit. What's the truth? Answer. Before answering your question, let's define one drink. It's 12 ounces of beer, 5 ounces of wine, or 1.5 ounces of hard liquor. And it means having one drink each day of the week, not having 7 drinks on Saturday night, sleeping it off Sunday, and begging off until next Saturday night. Now, despite the recent study, we stick with what we've said, which reflects the research of outstanding nutrition scientists at Harvard and elsewhere. But please notice the word generally in your question. There are many nutritional practices that may be healthy for most, but not for all people. Why? Because people are different. Our age, gender, genes, and lifestyles are different. And they're a tonic, and because with some types of food, a little is good, but a lot is not. In small doses, they're a tonic, but in larger doses, they're toxic. And because some practices affect the risk of one disease very differently from the risk of another, and because globally, nations are very different in their lifestyles and disease risks. The question of alcohol in women highlights the importance of all these differences. Your genes and your gender influence whether you might become addicted to alcohol, how efficiently you metabolize alcohol, and the effect of alcohol on your organs. In small doses, alcohol changes body chemistry in ways that reduce heart attacks and strokes. In larger doses, however, it damages many organs, including the heart, brain, and liver, and it damages the fetus in a pregnant woman. Also, alcohol addiction plays a key role in traffic deaths and violent crime. As for global differences, the study you're probably referring to was heavily influenced by death rates in developing nations, where death from tuberculosis fueled by alcohol is much more common than in the United States. As for the effect of alcohol on different diseases, more than 100 studies show that a woman who has one drink per day compared with a woman who does not drink has a reduced risk of having a heart attack and the most common kind of a stroke. Yet many of these same studies also show that even a drink a day increases a woman's risk of breast cancer. And thinking about this trade-off, it's important to know that the heart attacks are by far the most common cause of death in women, killing 10 times more women than does breast cancer. So a woman who is pregnant or who has a personal or family history of breast cancer, liver disease, or alcohol abuse should generally avoid alcohol. For others, one drink a day is generally healthy. Bracing for flu season. Steps to protect yourself right now. Get your flu shot. It's never too late. Wash your hands often and watch for signs of this dangerous virus. Flu season is underway and doctors are hopeful this year's influenza outbreak will be far less severe than the last one. 2017 and 18 flu season was ranked in the high severity category for every age group, hospitalizing hundreds of thousands of people and killing almost 200 children and tens of thousands of adults, most of them ages 65 and older. The number of cases and severity of the illness in last year's epidemic was a surprise, says Dr. Mark Poznanski, director of the Vaccine Immunology Center at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. Why was the last flu season so vicious? The flu vaccine wasn't a great match for the actual virus that wound up infecting people, Dr. Poznanski explains. The vaccine was only about 40% effective, meaning that people who received the vaccine were 40% less likely to get sick. The FDA is trying to figure out why. Predicting which flu strains will be floating around and thus which ones should go into a vaccine is always a gamble. It's done many months in advance because it takes months to make enough vaccine for hundreds of millions of people. But flu viruses are constantly changing, and the viruses that months ago were chosen for the vaccine may morph by the time the epidemic strikes, Dr. Poznanski says. This year's trivalent flu shot will cover 2 influenza A viruses and 1 influenza B, with 2 of the strains swapped out from last year. The quadrivalent vaccine, which covers 4 types of flu viruses, adds another B virus in the mix. Trivalent versus quadrivalent. Dr. Posnanski recommends that older adults get the quadrivalent vaccine if possible. It makes the most sense because it has the most targets, he says, but he stresses that more important than which vaccine you get is just getting vaccinated and urges you to get whichever vaccine is available. You have a better chance of avoiding illness or hospitalization if you get the vaccine, although it's not a guarantee, he says. What if you don't get the shot? That's risky for older adults. The CDC estimates that the vast majority of flu-related deaths, 71-85%, and flu-related hospitalizations, 54-70%, are current people ages 65 or older. You are especially susceptible for flu complications if you have diabetes or heart, lung, or kidney disease, or if you take medication that suppresses your immune system. Skipping a flu shot is risky for kids, too. Of the 179 children who died from the flu last season, 80% had not received a flu shot. What you should do, don't worry which flu shot your doctor or drugstore is offering. Unless you have a severe allergy to eggs, most vaccines are incubated in eggs. In that case, you can get an egg-free recombinant influenza vaccine called Flublok. Otherwise, just make sure that you get a vaccine from a registered site and that the product is standard FDA approved. Ask your pharmacist or doctor's office. In addition, don't get the shot when you're sick. Your immune system needs to be in good shape to mount a response to the vaccine. Remember that it takes 2 weeks for the flu shot to become effective. Get the shot earlier rather than later in the flu season, which lasts until May, to give yourself the best chance of protection. Take basic precautions to avoid getting and spreading the flu, such as washing your hands often with soap and warm water or hand sanitizer if soap is unavailable, and covering your mouth and nose when coughing or sneezing. In case of illness, sometimes the best attempt at avoiding the flu, even if you get the vaccination, can fall short. The flu is spread from person to person, often when someone with the flu talks, coughs, or sneezes. Droplets with the virus can travel up to 6 feet. You can also get the flu by touching something that has the virus on it, like a doorknob, and then touching your nose or mouth. Make sure to watch for flu symptoms such as weakness, fatigue, body aches, sore throat, congestion, and fever. If you do get sick, call your doctor within 2 days to ask if an antiviral drug will help. Otherwise, baby yourself, rest, drink plenty of fluids, and stay home. The bug will pass in a week or two. If it doesn't, or if you notice symptoms such as shortness of breath, a cough with colored sputum, difficulty breathing, or a high fever, 103 degrees or higher, call your doctor again. Flu can trigger pneumonia and other health complications. Don't try to be a trooper. What's the best way to wash your hands? Killing germs requires more than 5-second routine of soaping up and rinsing off your hands. Washing your hands with soap and water for 20 seconds, about the time it takes to sing 2 courses of happy birthday to you, reduces bacterial counts by about 90%. Make sure to clean all surfaces of your hands, including the fronts and backs, fingernails, fingertips, thumbs, and spaces between the fingers. Then rinse your hands thoroughly, but don't make the mistake of not drying your hands properly. Wet hands are more likely to spread germs than dry ones. Do you need other vaccinations? When you get the flu shot, it's a good time to check that you're up to date on other vaccinations. Consider these. Shingles vaccine. The CDC recommends 2 doses of the newer shingles vaccine, Shingrix, for all adults ages 50 or older, even if they've already had the older vaccine, Zostavax. Both vaccines guard against the varicella-zoster virus, which causes shingles as well as chickenpox. Shingrix has been found to be far more effective and to last longer than Zostavax. Shingrix, however, is more likely than Zostavax to cause temporary side effects such as fever and muscle pain. Tetanus vaccine. You probably do for a tetanus booster if you can't remember the last time you received the vaccine. It guards against the muscle tightening disease such as Lockjaw that could result from a bad scrape. Finally, pneumococcal vaccine. The CDC recommends 2 pneumococcal vaccines, which protect against pneumonia, bacteremia, and meningitis for adults 65 and older. Get a dose of PCV13 first, followed by a dose of PPSV23 6 to 12 months later. If you've already had PPS V23, then get PCV 13 a year later. If you had PCV 13 before age 65, you won't need another dose. Warning: avoid these novel treats in shopping malls and restaurants. If your grandkids urge you to indulge them in a popular new snack at the mall, just say no. The FDA is warning that consuming products with liquid nitrogen added at the last minute can lead to injury. The products are marketed under the names such as Dragon's Breath and Nitro Puff. Their cheese puffs are cereal pieces that are frozen in liquid nitrogen and then dipped in a special sauce. When you put them in your mouth, the products release vapor that looks like smoke. Liquid nitrogen is also added to some cocktails to make them look like they're emitting a fog. But the FDA says all of these products can cause severe damage to skin and internal organs and may cause breathing problems. The agency advises you to avoid these products. So we're also going to talk about what's causing that belly bloat, the season of receiving free services that help health, the benefits of adding foam rolling to your workout, and gift ideas to inspire healthy eating. We have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues, so be sure to listen to the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.
Of the North Carolina Reading Service is to connect people who are blind and print impaired with each other, their families, and the community by delivering news, information, and entertainment using the latest audio technology. If you have questions or comments, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. You can also visit our website at ncreadingservice.org. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.